So this is another teleconference. This is Scott speaking. Scott Killaby and Jeff Foster's on here, and a lot of other people. So we hope that there's some dialogue here today, maybe even more than we had last time. What we want to do is we want to get in a dialogue about what the topic is today. I was visiting England. Jeff and I usually end up having conversations about various things. It seemed like one of the themes that kept coming up in our talks were the possibility of relationship and how it's almost never talked about in spiritual teachings, especially non-dual teachings, because often the emphasis is that there is no self. And so then how does the self have a relationship if there's no one and nobody? So, and you know what? Just like all things, it isn't that simple. You know, because we like to think that it's just that simple, that there's no self, therefore there can't be any relationship. And that's the mind's way of kind of compartmentalizing freedom. It kind of says, well, there isn't anybody, therefore there can't be any relationship. And that's kind of just like an off-the-cuff kind of conclusion that the mind makes. But the truth of our experience is that life goes on, and everybody here knows that. Life goes on even if you've had whatever has happened, if you've seen through your story like so many have, or you're seeing that your story, that what you took yourself to be is not really what you are, and it's incredibly freeing and wonderful and all that stuff. And then there's also this other aspect of life, which is that at some point your spouse comes in and knocks on the door, or the children come in, or your pets, or your boss, or your parents, or your sister, or brother, or friend. And life goes on in apparent duality. And one of the things that I hear a lot about, and it's in the things that I experience, is just like conflict that people have. I think that shocks somebody when they've already sort of seen that there's nobody there, that at the core there's nobody there. There's just like nothingness. It's like, and that's a beautiful thing. It's so, I don't know what the word for it is. It's so true, I guess. But then life does go on. And so what Jeff and I are talking about, there's no script to what we're talking about. We don't have a bullet point system. We don't have a set of ideas that we want to hit on. It's not like that at all. We want it to be much more spontaneous. The thing about this thing is that it's not like Jeff and Scott have the answers. If anything, as Jeff was telling me when we were in London, is that you almost have to start in relationship in a place from not knowing. So you can't really have a bullet point system about how to, and this is certainly not about how to have a better relationship, because when you build it like that, it's as if somebody here knows how to do that. And if anything, I've come to see that relationship is an exploration of, it's and that's why we name this conference, Is There the Possibility of Relationship? Because it doesn't come with the assumption that there is or is not the possibility. It simply asks the question. And I'll just say a few more things about that before we kind of chime in. Is, you know, in the belief in separation, it comes from relationship is thought to be that I'm Scott and that I am a certain thing, my story, my viewpoints, my ideas about the world, myself and others, and that there are other people who are separate people, and somehow I have to have a relationship as a Scott with someone else. And of course that kind of thing is ripe for all sorts of issues that pop up, because oftentimes I would not hear people because I was always trying to get my viewpoint across, and so I wasn't actually hearing what they were saying. I heard U.G. Krishnamurti say I was interpreting them, I wasn't hearing them. And that comes, I think, from some sort of relying on viewpoints, relying on the belief that I am a Scott, and that's a solid, separate thing. That story is real. And that somehow that story can have a relationship with another story. And I think that's the thing that gets challenged in non-dual realization, the idea that a story can actually have a relationship with another story. If you listen to what I'm saying, it becomes absurd, actually, that a story, it's like having two books. How can a book have a relationship with another book? Because the story is just a bunch of viewpoints that are already believed. How can that set of viewpoints have a relationship with another another story becomes really difficult, as we all know. Or it can be, at least. And so I think that's probably why Jeff said we almost have to start from a place of not knowing, a place that's just like a clear, it's like a very sweet kind of clear, open space that's actually listening for what the other is saying. And really, to me, it's not even saying that there is or is not an other. It's not even saying that. That's saying too much. It's actually simply just listening from a place where there isn't a viewpoint. And it seems like that's a good starting point. Jeff and I are going to do a similar conference at the Science and Non-Duality Conference this October in California. And our conference is going to be Monday, October 25th. From 9 in the morning until 5 p.m. at the Santa Rosa room at the conference. That'll be like the Monday after the conference. So we hope that a lot of people show up and we kind of just explore this topic a little bit more. So yeah, okay, so that's kind of where I'm opening it up, and hopefully we'll get the conversation going. Jeff, are you still with us?
Yeah, hi Scott, and hello everyone. Thanks for joining this conference call. Yeah, I think Scott, you just kind of opened it up really nicely. I mean, it's a total paradox in a way. I mean, if you're talking about non-duality, you're talking about seeing through the story. You know, seeing through your story, seeing through the story that there is a you separate from another. Seeing through the story that there's a me separate from a you. I mean, so in a way, it doesn't make sense, you know. Well, it seems that what you are, you know, in your essence is this open, spacious awareness in which all stories come and go, then surely, you know, if the other, you know, another person is simply my story, and if ultimately there is no other, then where does human relationship come into this? You know, where does human relationship come into this? And in an ultimate sense, well, you could say there's no one here to have a relationship with anyone over there, because there's no one over there either. That's the, you know, in a sense, there's an ultimate truth there. That there's no separate person here and there's no separate person there. But it's an interesting place, I think, just to begin this teleconference. And Scott, as you said, you know, that's why we called this teleconference, we called it non-duality, the possibility of relationship. So we're really asking the question, you know, in this, is relationship even possible? What does relationship mean in this context? And I think this is something that doesn't often get talked about. You know, because in the radical advisor stuff, you know, well, there's no one here, there's no one there, there's no person, there's no time, there's no space, therefore there's no relationship. So you're not, you know, going into the idea of me and you and our relationship means going into the story of time. And, you know, the radical advisor person would say, well, that's just a story, that's the illusion. So anyway, I won't carry on, because we're gonna be discussing all of this stuff, but yes, yeah, so I mean, the question really is relationship possible? Is relationship possible? And as Scott said, you know, we're not coming to this with any preconceived ideas or any conclusions. This is a really an open question. Is relationship possible? And if there really is no me and no you, how do we meet as human beings living in this world? Although ultimately this world is illusory and it's all a creation of thought, etc., etc., is it possible to meet as human beings, to meet? And I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no, it's a question. So maybe that's a good place to start, you know, with that fascination, with that wonder. You know, we don't know. There's no authority on this. And let's talk about it together, and let's see what emerges. Because I certainly don't see myself, and I know Scott, you don't see yourself as a guru or as a teacher. Really, we're just I know it's quite heretical to say in a way, but we're human beings talking. And let's begin there and see what happens.
We're just kind of exploring this issue, which as far as I know isn't explored very often in this kind of way. So, I mean, obviously there are lots of things out there like programs where you build a better marriage or build it, and that's not what we're talking about. We're actually asking, is it even possible? What does relationship look like when we're not coming from, or at least we're not emphasizing story versus story? But until we...
Doug Samlin here. I just want, whenever you got a good break, I have a quick comment.
Sure.
Basically, you and Jeff both do an excellent job. I was actually just reading in Love's Quiet Revolution this morning, articulating how easily a mind can get caught up in thinking and concept. And on the spectrum of duality, it seems as though there's the constricted ego on kind of the one end and Advaitic concept on the other. But it still is all concept. And for instance, we, meaning my voice here and anybody listening, are relating right now. And that's kind of been my experience in relationship, is that it doesn't need to be defined as such. That sort of puts it back into time and mind. But relating is very much a reality at the level of body, mind. There's all sorts of psychological and physical bonding that can go on with mates and family and that sort of thing. And that's just part of the reality of it, in the sense that there may be distinction, you know, there may be sense of another, but that doesn't mean there's actual separation. And as long as it's just experienced in the real living moment, really nothing needs to be said about it. Relating happens. And it's when we get back into the realm of time and mind and control and separation, all that, when it becomes an issue. But I would say the reality is there's something that can be called relating that clearly goes on. And it's fine until thinking enters into it, and just as with pretty much everything else.
That's really excellent. Actually, there were some really good things said there. And the thing that popped up for me is that here I'm listening to some voice. I don't know, you know, what it's connected to, but I know that it's a perspective that's unique, you know, that your voice just came out of nowhere and presented something unique. And, like, that's, you know, we could say that's happening here, whatever this is.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, that's a relating. I mean, you just, that's a prime example. It's like this voice comes out and says, this is what I think, you know. And it doesn't have to be about, well, you're right or wrong, or you're separate and I've got the right view, or who are you. It's not. It's just this
mm-hmm.
voice coming out of nowhere. It's very wonderful. It's like, wow, that's cool.
mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that it's, you know, the Advaita concept might be, you know, there's no one talking. Or we could say there's someone talking, but I think, yeah, you made a lovely point that what's actually happening is beyond both, really. It's beyond someone talking, no one talking. In a way, there is talking happening, and there is listening happening. Yeah, and that's kind of undeniable, that there's something going on here. You know, so let's begin there. You know, that there's something happening, there's talking happening, and there's listening happening. And I have to say, you know, if there's any relationship that's possible, it has to begin there somehow, with talking and listening. You know, telling your story, someone telling their story, someone else hearing that story. You know, and in an ultimate sense, yeah, you know, it's just it's a sound coming out of nowhere, like this voice right now. It's just appearing in space. Now, these are just sounds appearing in space. So the question is how, I mean, in that context, what is relationship? What are we relating to?
Yeah.
I guess in a way it's more of a meditation than a question, isn't it? It's something to sit with.
Something to live. I mean, it's
something to live. Yeah.
Yeah, something to live. That's what I think of when I think of meditation. I don't think of it as a practice. It's like a living experience. Like here we are, experiencing relationship, not just in this conference, but in every aspect of our lives. That something is happening. As you were also talking, Jeff, I was thinking of like what I say is the old way is just the separation where it's like. If you're speaking, or if the guy that just spoke, if when he's speaking, if I have some predetermined idea about who he is, and I've got this little box, and I say that that's who he is, and then I'm not really hearing him, actually. I'm trying to make sure that, I'm trying to confirm that what he says fits in his box so that I can sort of stick with my judgment of that kind of viewpoint, and I'm not hearing it, you know?
Yeah, and you're making up a story about where that voice is coming from, what sort of person would say those words? And you start to build up a story about who this person is and what they must believe and what they don't believe and maybe the sort of characteristics that they have. And you're so busy doing that that you miss actually what's being said, what's being communicated.
Yeah.
You know, in the moment, which of course is all there is. I mean, all there is if relationship's anywhere, surely it must be in the moment.
Right. Here's a question from somebody. If there is no other at the relative level, I think they may have sent at the absolute level, why do we not read each other's thoughts? Why can we be surprised by another's thought? How do we find the new in another's word? Those are good questions. And what I would say is, that's telling us something. Why don't we read each other's thoughts? I mean, that's a good question. Like, why isn't that happening? There's something happening here. There's something happening, like, that you can't really, it doesn't have to be like there are totally separate individuals, but there definitely are unique perspectives, and what makes them unique is that somebody can say something, and it presents this other viewpoint, and I didn't think of it that way. I didn't have that thought. That's a new perspective, but now I can hear that, you know? So instead of, like, kind of what Jeff is saying, instead of, like, these kinds of questions, like, why do we not read each other's thoughts, you know, they don't really ultimately have answers. The wisdom is in the question itself. It's like it's really pointing something out, which is that we don't read each other's thoughts. Like, isn't that amazing? So what's happening there, it becomes like, yeah, we don't. I don't know what's going to be said next. And then I'm just waiting to hear what's said next in relationship. And then something is said and I'm surprised. But if I come thinking that I already know what's going to be said, and I know that the kind of person that would say something like that, or I already know that my dad is already like a certain way, and therefore I know that when he says a viewpoint, that it's going to be a dad viewpoint, and therefore I'm going to shut him out because I have this preconceived idea. I'm not surprised at all, actually, when the thought comes out, because when his thought comes out, I think, oh, that's a dad thought. It goes in the pile of dad thoughts, the preconceived dad thoughts, and therefore I didn't hear him. All it did was confirm the separation there, that there's a dad over there and a me over here, and he confirmed once again that he's dad and I'm me, and he's wrong and I'm right, or however that works. And I think we're talking about something different than that, something where we can actually be surprised because we're listening with fresh ears. We're listening like we're listening for the first time, and the mind will obviously sometimes want to say, well, this comes from my dad, and of course he would say that because this is how he is. I know how he is. But then we've gone back into interpretation, and where Yuji Krishnamurti was saying, we're interpreting each other, we're not listening.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting. It's interesting the way we listen to someone else and how. And the interesting question is why do we defend our viewpoints? What's in it for us, really? What's in it for us? And I think ultimately it has something to do with death. You know, I think somehow, in a very strange way, not knowing is connected with death. You know, being wrong, not knowing in the face of the other. You know, that total humility in the face of the other, the admission that I don't know, you might be right. I don't know, you might be right. Somehow, in a very mysterious way, I think it's connected to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so really, the question, you know, can I hear you? It's actually, in a very mysterious way, the same thing as saying, can I die now? can I die to you?
Can I?
Yeah. In a way, that's the only way I can really hear you, is to die to you in this moment, to admit, I don't know, that you might be right. Otherwise, I don't think real listening is possible. And I could be wrong.
Yeah, you could be wrong, exactly, that's it, right?
This is the thing. What was recognized here, you know, years ago now, was actually, what can I know? If I'm truly, radically, deeply honest, you know, brutally honest as honest can be, what can I actually know for sure? What can I really know for sure?
So, do you have anything else, Jeff? I have a question here.
No, we can just take a question, see what happens.
Okay, here's a question for you, Jeff. This is from Christine. It says, not meaning to be religious here, but I see relating as when the Bible says, when two or more are gathered in my name, when I identify and not compare with another, see our similarities, then I see myself. Do I then see consciousness? I can repeat the question if you...
Yeah, could you repeat the question?
Sure. Not meaning to be religious here, but I see relating. She says she sees relating as when the Bible says, when two or more gathered in my name. So she's relating my name as consciousness, I think. Mm. So she's saying, when I identify and not compare with another, when I see our similarities, then I see myself. Is that, she's saying, don't I then see consciousness?
Mm. Well, in a sense, yeah. What I am, you know, in my essence, beyond the story of who I am, you know, beyond the story of Jeff, you know, which is the past, you know, what I am beyond that story, cannot be separate, cannot be different in any way from what you are beyond your story. You know, beyond the story of Jeff and the story of Scott, say, or the story of Christine, what could possibly separate us? The separation only appears to be in the story. So yeah, you know, it's like, when I see you, I see myself, but not, I mean, you have to be careful with terminology, of course. I don't see Jeff in you. You know, but what is beyond Jeff is what you are. You know, that in which Jeff appears, and that in which Scott appears, or Christine appears, that you could call that consciousness, you could call it being, awareness, call it nothing, call it everything, call it life, or don't even talk about it. You know, in the end, it doesn't matter. So I am what you are. I am exactly what you are. Can I tell the story about? I want to tell the story about my going for a walk with my mum years ago. I'm sure I've told this story before. I might have even told it last time, but it's. I think my mum's actually on the conference call at the moment.
Hi, Jeff. Hi.
Hello. I hope you don't mind me telling the story.
Oh, go for it. I remember it well.
Okay. Well, I'll do the shortened version. You know, we were, Mum, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we were walking through a park, you know, beautiful park in England. And this was years ago. This was in my days where I was really heavily identified as being an enlightened person. I really had that story running that I was an enlightened person. You know, I had transcended the ego. I was free. And, you know, other people weren't, especially my mum. You know, I was no one. You know, I was no one, but other people were still someone's, and my mum especially, she was a someone. Like, I had transcended the dream, and she was still stuck in the dream. This was my story, and of course, back then I didn't realize it was my story, because I thought I was enlightened, I thought I had no story. So we were walking in the park, you know, really beautiful, beautiful sunny day, and we walked past this beautiful tree, and my mum, she loves nature, she loves trees, and she said to me, "Jeff, you know, look at that tree, isn't that a beautiful tree?" And of course, to me back then, that was just a story. That was a story. And so I remember getting really angry with her, because it was like, "Mum, you know, that tree is a story. You're still stuck in the dream. You know, there is no tree. There is no tree, and beauty is a concept." You know, so I remember getting really angry with her, and you know, of course, what I couldn't see back then is that those were my concepts. You see, I thought I had transcended all concepts. I thought I had reached the absolute, you know, the absolute ultimate reality, where there's no me, there's no you, there's no tree, beauty is a concept, ugliness is a concept, everything's a concept. But you see, what had happened actually, if I'm really honest about it now, is that I'd stopped listening. All she had said was, "It's a beautiful tree." And I hadn't been able to hear it, because I thought I was enlightened, you see. So even these spiritual concepts, you know, I mean, any concepts, when they're identified with, you know, any identity, any image of yourself that you're clinging onto for dear life, and back then I was clinging onto the image of myself as a no one. I thought I was a no one, but what I couldn't see back then, that was just another image, you know. So what had happened was, that was actually a complete and utter breakdown of relationship. I see that now, of course, but back then I thought I was completely clear. I thought I had completely seen clearly, you know, I was free, and actually I was still totally, totally stuck in this spiritual identity, in this kind of Advaita identity of being no one. And so I think that's kind of just an example of how, where relationship breaks down, and also where it begins, because actually, you know, it was a beautiful tree. It was a beautiful tree, and she was right, and I hadn't been able to listen, you see. And so what happened was, I ended up missing the beauty of that tree, even though, of course, you know, in an ultimate sense, there is no tree, and there is an ultimate truth to that. You know, and I want to honor that ultimate truth, you know, that there's no me, there's no you, there's no tree, everything's a concept, blah, 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 blah. But somehow, the moment you believe that there's no tree, it's no longer true. You know, the moment you believe there's no tree, you're completely back into another religion, and you're going to end up completely separating yourself from someone who doesn't subscribe to that religion. You see, I was in the religion of no tree, and my mum was in the religion of tree, and we couldn't meet. And back then, I thought that was freedom. But I just wanted to tell that story, because I think it's just a great example of how we can completely delude ourselves, and at the same time think we're totally free.
Right. You know, Jeff, you make a good point, because most all of the spiritual messages are really, in one way or the other, they're about seeing through what we call ego or self. And then, of course, like you're saying, once, you know, you can have those insights where you see there's no self, and like you say, it can just become another viewpoint, and then another way is to separate. I know exactly what you mean. In fact, there was a period in time where, you know, I experienced a quiet mind and all that, and concepts were all false, and there's a truth to all of that, because there really is, because they really are just ideas. And then I think at some point there became a shutting out of the possibility of hearing what someone was saying in favor of my viewpoint that there is no body and there is no one and all concepts are false. So I was favoring this viewpoint that was shutting out the possibility of hearing, you know, in favor of some idea about no self, no story, no world. I had the same experience. And then someone just wrote the question, which says, I think it's important to clarify what the assumptions are underlying this question. Scott, when you keep talking about the difference between hearing and interpreting, not hearing is also a kind of relationship. Interpreting is also a kind of relationship. So that is one point. The other point is, what is the other person saying? Isn't that also a story? So yeah, and I think that when it comes to, I mean, everything that appears is just that. It's all story. You know, that's the sort of the Advaita way. Everything is all story. So hearing, not hearing, interpreting, not interpreting. That's a kind of meditation that people do, living meditation or whatever. But what you're saying at the end is this other point is, what is the other person saying? What's being said? And when Jeff was sharing that story, you see, there's one way to hear that story, which is, it's hearing it through a filter, you know, a thick filter, like, well, Jeff, either I haven't had that experience, or I have had that experience, or you're wrong, Jeff, or you're right, Jeff. That's a kind of a filter, because if I'm listening from that place, I'm trying to explain how your viewpoint, your story, is either right or correct or accurate. But there's another way, which has really nothing to do with self or no self. It's just simply, do I hear what you're saying? That's a whole different kind of question. It feels different. Energetically, it feels different. In other words, when your concepts, when you're painting pictures with your concepts, when you say tree, can I simply allow a tree to appear while you're speaking? And can I envision you with your mom walking? And let those concepts, this isn't even all concepts are false or all stories are false. That's not even this. This is, tell me about your concepts. Tell me your story, Jeff. Tell me the story of being with your mom that day. And then if I have just complete clarity in terms of not trying to look at your story from the filter of my own story or my interpretation, but actually, what are you saying? Then it's like your perspective appears for me, and I get to hear your story without deciding whether it's right or wrong, without deciding whether it's truth or not truth. I just get to hear it. It's just like, it's a really like a raw thing, just to hear something without, and I think that's really what we're trying to touch on here. Something, it's something other than no self. It's something other than some spiritual viewpoint that we hunker down on. It's something else. And you said something else that was so good. You said, that when you had the viewpoint no self, and your mom had the viewpoint self, that those things, something like those things never meet. But so it was the possibility of hearing the other side. And so it's like the possibility of hearing the other side, that there's another side to a viewpoint, and then actually hearing that not by trying to make my viewpoint right on my side of the opposites, and not trying to prove that there's no self, but actually hearing a point of view that says there's a self, and not trying to push that away, and letting that little dance happen, that little play happen without, and just basically hearing it. I think that's something different than like having an insight that there is no self and sort of just believing that. It's something different, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a world of difference between someone coming up to me, say my mom, you know, coming up to me and saying, Jeff, isn't that a beautiful tree? And on one level, you know, it's an object appearing in awareness here. This person, you know, or even to project that it's a person is already a story appearing in awareness here. And then the story that it's a person, it's Jeff's mother. And of course, that's a story appearing in awareness here. And then, you know, that she says, you know, it's a beautiful tree. And that's just the sound. It's a beautiful tree. It's a sound appearing in awareness here. And see, seeing that essentially the world is merely an appearance in awareness, you know, an appearance is come and go in awareness. Seeing that, there's a world of difference in seeing that and hearing what she is saying. Hearing that it's a beautiful tree, connecting with a human being. Because you see, two awarenesses, how can two awarenesses have a relationship? You see, an awareness, pure awareness has nothing to say to pure awareness. because there's no one there to say anything. There's nothing to say. You see, but there's something mysterious, almost miraculous. You know, this strange creature comes up to me, and it says, "It's a beautiful tree." And somehow hearing that, "It's a beautiful tree," it's possible, and even experiencing, through hearing the words, "It's a beautiful tree," seeing this person speak these words, looking at me speaking these words, to be able to look at the tree and go and experience that beauty that she's pointing to, and say, and really to meet her there, to meet her in the beauty of the tree, to meet her in the beauty of the tree, and go, "Yeah, yes, you know, it is a beautiful tree. I hear you." It's like that. There's a world of difference between really hearing what someone's saying and seeing that the world is merely an appearance arising in awareness. You know, and where do these two things meet? Because in an ultimate sense, you know, yeah, the world is just my story. The world is my story, and the story appears in awareness, and it appears here. You know, the story comes and goes here in awareness, and ultimately awareness is not separate from that which appears in awareness. So how does that connect to hearing about the beautiful tree? And meeting someone there, you know, that's something that doesn't often get spoken about, especially in the Advaita teachings, because the Advaita teachings often really kind of focus on everything's just awareness, there's only awareness, the story comes and goes in awareness, the story is illusory, you know, discover the unchangeable awareness or consciousness or being behind the world, because that's where freedom lies, is in that which is beyond the world, you know, in the awareness, discover the awareness behind the passing forms, behind the passing thought forms. Well, but I think, sorry, I'll say one last thing. I think where relationship begins to be possible is where it begins to be seen that this awareness behind the world actually is inseparable from the world. You see, if there is any such thing as awareness, it is ultimately inseparable from hearing my mum tell me about a beautiful tree and responding.
In relationship, yeah.
And relationship, yeah.
Somebody was trying to chime in. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi there.
Thank you.
I was just thinking as well, it's like, you know, everything is great, it's awareness, it's all one, but it's this kind of, you know, everything in the end is this kind of dance and interaction between life and death. And it's like, you know, Jeff said it well before, you have to die in order for the next part of the conversation or the relationship to happen. And you know, we always distinguish between, you know, physical death, or we think we live a long time, which is whatever, 100 years. But everything is actually the same in this kind of interaction between life and death. And I think that's how awareness interacts with itself and learns about itself. And you know, when you create your story, you know, you create this kind of temporal fantasy land that's disconnected from the natural flow of life and death. And even in the, you know, like in the conversation or the relationship or whatever, there's that same natural flow of life and death that, you know, if it's allowed to happen naturally, is how everything else happens naturally. I don't know if that makes any sense. It made more sense in my mind a few minutes ago.
The thing that popped up as you were talking is that we go back to this thing about exploring. This is like an alive thing. So when you're talking, if there's energy in me that wants to come up and sort of disagree or agree, either way, I'm in some ways I'm really still not hearing. So in order to hear you, I have to sort of like recognize myself as that awareness that's listening. You know, that's the thing that came up for me, because, you know, have you ever been in a situation with like a spouse or a friend or something? All that I'm saying is, have you ever been in a situation with a friend and a friend is trying to talk, and you have that energy in the body that just wants to come up and say how the person is wrong or how it's not the right viewpoint, it's not the way that it really is. And if you can just look again from a place that has no idea about what the truth is or what the right perspective is, and then you can finally hear somebody, it's just, that's to me what Jeff was saying, die to the self. it couldn't be any other way, because the self is that energy that thinks it already knows. I already know what this is. I already know what I am, and I already know what you are, and I can't hear. But to die is to actually see. I know that many can relate to that. Just, you know, your spouse starts talking, and you, every part of you wants to come up and explain how it's wrong. The way that you're looking at it is just, that's not the way that it is. And that's what I'm trying to say about hearing. True, that not hearing and interpreting all of that is, those are all appearances, definitely. But I think when it comes to relationship, there's the possibility of hearing, you know. Go ahead, whoever wants to chime in here. Also, David, I unmuted you, David. So I think you have to speak. Yeah.
Can you hear me, Scott?
Yep.
It seems that hearing on that level is definitely risky. In other words, there's a real possibility of change. And I think one of the things that prevents the depth of us connecting is that, you know, it's been talked about as death, but it's that fear of change, letting go of the idea of who I think I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, logic threatens that, yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, death is death of me. Death is, you know, death of identity. Who am I? When I'm really listening, you know, and coming from that place of I don't know. Maybe you're right. You know, maybe your experience is 100% valid. You know, you know, in that listening, where am I? In that listening, where is the listener? Where is the me with my past and everything I've accumulated and my sense of
your knowledge.
My knowledge, you know, my knowledge about or my knowledge about relationships, everything I know about relationships, about what's right and wrong in relationships. In a way, in the listening, I become a newborn baby again. I become a newborn baby in the face of life. I become nothing in the face of your everything. You know, it is a kind of death, you know, not physical death. I mean, the body's still there, but it's like there's a real humility in it. I think. I mean, there's a real humility in it to in listening, in true listening, in real listening. You know, everything I know could be wrong. And I'm listening, you know, and I'm not saying is that you're right and I'm wrong. I'm just saying I don't know. There's a huge difference. There's a huge difference. I'm not saying that I'm wrong. I'm saying I don't know.
There's also the the sense that there's an expectation that I need to respond, that I need to have something to continue with what I've just heard. And so listening from truly an I don't know place, in that deep sense of really being still and quiet, again, there's that sense of vulnerability, but also, you know, sometimes the speaker is wanting you to respond. I find in conversation many times when somebody's speaking to me, they want me to have an answer, and often if I'm listening really deeply, I'm taking in that experience. Like when somebody says that's a beautiful tree, you know, I'm taking that in, and sometimes I find myself not really understanding what that is, but yet I'm feeling it very deeply. And so when there's that expectation that I have to jump in and respond, at that point I almost feel like I've cut off the relationship.
Yeah. You know, I was having a conversation the other day with a friend who said that he was thinking about going on vacation, but he had limited finances and couldn't really afford it. So he said, "Scott, if you were me, what would you do?" You know, this is one of those funny, awkward moments, because the point is that I don't know what I am. I don't know what I am or what I am, how can I be you? I don't know what that is. I mean, so how can I step into whatever that you is and then decide what the right answer is? You know, so it ended, but of course, had I taken that as, if I had left it there, then I would have shut out the conversation. Then I wouldn't have, there'd have been no dialogue there at all. If I had just decided that there's no way that I can know what I am, let alone know what you are on any of these viewpoints. But instead, what I said was, I just said that to him. I said, the only thing I can do is listen and ask you questions. And then I asked him questions. I just asked, what's important for you? What is important to you? And that was, I didn't have any advice for him. I can't tell him what to do. I can say, what's important to you? And all of a sudden, he started to tell his story about what's important to him. And I didn't contribute anything to the conversation. I didn't give any advice. All I did was listen. And somehow he worked that out. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing experience, actually. It seems sort of mundane, but it was an amazing experience because there was something happened in that conversation that apparently could not have happened had he just sat there and mulled this over in his mind. And I understood as he was telling his story what it feels like to not have any money but to still want to go on vacation. I can feel both of those energies. And had I decided that I know what's best for him and to somehow control him and say, you know, here's what you have to do, I don't think that I could have really, what am I trying to say, that I don't think I really would have let, he wouldn't have been able to tell his story about, he wouldn't have been able to figure that out for himself, you know, if I came through advice. It came more like wanting to just explore listening, and it was such a mundane topic, you know, whether I go on vacation, but it just showed me the possibility of listening. And by the way, there's some other questions here. Somebody want to chime in?
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I just wanted to say that for me, it's like when you're really, really listening, you actually become the other person in a way.
Yeah.
Because you're completely, you forget all about yourself and your own story, and it's really like becoming the other person. And what I found, because I think you're really describing like a coaching situation, what you did when you asked those questions, and what I find with people when I sit with them, it's like when you become the other person or you forget about yourself and you're totally feeling with them, you also bring some kind of energy to the moment that helps.
Yeah.
I was
just going to say quickly, a couple of years ago, I can't remember, I was working as a therapist for a while, and I remember very clearly that I had this one client, and she was just about to leave a marriage. I think she'd been married for 10, 20 years, and she was going to go and live on her own for the very first time in her life. She had found herself an apartment, you know, one-bedroom apartment, and she was, the following week, she was going to move into it. First time in her life she had ever lived by herself, and we were talking, and she was telling me all this fear was coming up, And what she kept on saying to me was, "Look, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to be okay." And I just looked at her at one point, and I went, "Look, I don't know either." and it was incredible. You know, something happened, or there was something. It was like I felt that that's where we really met somehow. You know, that's. The therapist and client, the roles just kind of dissolved in that I don't know, you don't know, and it's okay. And I said to her, you know, can that be okay to not know? And it's strange, it was amazing, because this woman had been, she said she'd been to like many, many different therapists, and nothing really ever worked for her, because everyone was trying to fix her, you see. Everyone was trying to make her feel better, or make her get in touch with her positivity or something, and what felt really authentic in that moment was, you know, I don't know either, and there's something quite intimate about that. I think it's like in the I don't know, there can be real listening and real intimacy. You know, because in that I don't know, what's there to separate us? You know, it's not my I don't know and your I don't know.
It's,
but there's something so beautifully intimate about that, and I think often, you know, we're so busy trying to fix people or even help people that we kind of, or to make people feel better. And there's nothing wrong with any of that, of course. There's nothing wrong with trying to fix people, trying to help people, trying to make people feel better. There's nothing wrong with any of that, of course. But what I'm interested in is like what is real intimacy? What does it mean to really meet? What does it mean to really meet another human being? And for me, it's something to do with I don't know.
There really is a love in that too. You know, that's a topic that hasn't come up yet. There's a love in that because it's not like I'm trying to advise you or I'm trying to, it's not like I know or trying to control you. Some lady just wrote in, said, how frightening to allow others the freedom to be or say anything. Mm-hmm. So challenging and scary to me. I feel the need to keep them boxed in or control them in some way. I mean, I can relate to what she's saying because it's the way to turn away from love, just to use a phrase, is to say that I know what's best for you, and this is the way that it is, and I have the right answer for you, and in truth, then that may arise too, actually, that I have the right answer. That might arise too. But what if I just don't know, and what if we meet there in the fact that we don't know, and how does that change the situation? And that's experience to me is love. I mean, not that we just walk around saying we don't know to each other about everything, because it's not the way the relationship really works, but it's a good place to start, you know?
Mm.
Really.
In a sense, you know, that's where we all are all the time, if we're all really honest. You know, underneath our story about how our life should be and what we want from life, what we need from life, and what's going to happen in the future. If we're really honest, we don't know. We can pretend to know. We can kid ourselves that we know. And what we can, you know, we can spend our lives in a way running away from that not knowing, from that real vulnerability and that openness and that intimacy. That intimacy as well, because to admit that I don't know is in a sense to be totally naked in front of another human being, to totally expose yourself.
Exactly. You know, this morning I shared on Facebook, anybody can chime in at any time, don't wait for a breath, I don't, so you shouldn't either. I shared on Facebook this morning is that, you know, whenever I feel like defensive energy coming up in me, it's always reminding me that someone's just telling me some story that I was trying to avoid. You try to use a simple example of like, if my partner says, you should mow the grass, and something in me just gets really defensive. If I actually listen to that defensive energy, it's telling me that I think I know. That I think I know that the right answer, and then if I can just feel that, as he says that you should mow the grass, and just feel that, oh, he's reminding me of another viewpoint that's different than what I had. My viewpoint is I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't do that. And if I just, oh, he's reminding me that that's another story that I should mow the grass. Then it just takes the conflict out of that, because then I know that I don't know the right answer. It's just so simple. I don't know the right answer. I don't know whether I should or I shouldn't. But I certainly was acting like I knew the answer, and the answer was that I shouldn't do that. And he was reminding me of the opposite. And if I just let that defensive energy be the perfect guide, then I can see both sides, both little viewpoints. And then I don't know whether I'm going to mow the grass. I have no idea. But then at least I'm clear about one thing, which is that I don't know. And I'm clear about the fact that I thought that I knew the answer to that. And that can happen at any time in any day, any time I find myself reacting. It somewhat is reminding me that there's another story out in the universe that's being kind of shut out of my experience.
Yeah, essentially that I'm not the only one in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting how someone can say to us, you know, a partner can say to us, you know, go and mow the grass. And we go so quickly to, you know, they shouldn't even think that. How dare they think that? You know, they always try and get me to mow the grass. Why don't they mow the grass? Blah, 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 blah. all they said was, you know, can you mow the grass?
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to hear it. You know, it's like some, all right, he thinks I should mow the grass. That's it. That is it. And then I find myself mowing the grass, or not mowing the grass. That's it.
But you're clear about that, yeah.
Yeah. But rather than, you know, it's almost we get angry that he would even think that, or that she would even think. How dare they think? How dare they have that thought? But it's like you were saying, Scott, that, oh, it's possible to have that thought. That thought is a possibility.
Yeah.
I know, because I've had that thought. There's, like, thoughts are just thoughts. They're not my thoughts, they're your thoughts. Like, I've had that thought before. That thought has appeared here. So, of course, it's going to appear there. Because it's all the same consciousness. So, you know, you should mow the grass. It appears there, or it appears here. It's the same thought. But we so quickly go into, they shouldn't think that, or how dare they think that, or how dare they want that, or they always want that, blah, 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 blah. And actually, it's the real simplicity in life is just to listen. You know, life tells you everything you need to know in the moment. Like, what that tells you is someone thinks you should mow the grass. That's all the information is there. There's no hidden information in life. It's all right there. You know, people are completely honest. People are always 1,000% honest in every single thing they say.
Yeah.
If you can listen, all the information is there. All the information you need in the universe.
The entire universe is in there. I could walk out to the back window and I could look and see that the grass was kind of tall, and then I thought, well, even if it wasn't tall, that's not the point really, because all that he was saying is that for him the grass is tall. That's it.
Hey, I was just going to say, but it's always comes down to the same thing again about the stories. It's the story that I have that, you know, go mow the grass means this and that. And And then when that story is let go, like you said, then all that it happened is the person said, go mow the lawn or whatever. But with no story buffering it on either end.
Mm.
And then, so, you know, it's the same as the Enlightenment story. It's all kind of the same thing.
Exactly, because if you've got years ago I had the enlightened identity, you know, I thought I was enlightened, I thought I was no one. You know, so if someone says to me, if someone had said to me years ago, Jeff, you go mow the grass. So because I was trying to holding up this enlightened identity, you know, enlightened people don't mow the grass when they're told, right?
Exactly.
So, it's like the question really becomes, what are you defending? What image of yourself are defending? Have you got an image of yourself as someone who doesn't mow the grass? Or even someone who doesn't want to mow the grass?
Yeah, right.
Or someone who isn't able to mow the grass. Or someone who, I mean, it just goes on. It's like, what are you defending? What image of yourself? What image of yourself? And in the end, it's about you. It can't be about him or her.
No.
In the end, it's what image are you defending?
And it's all the same. They're all just, I mean, the stories themselves are different, but it's all exactly the same. And they all behave, and it all behaves in the same way.
Yeah. Right.
And when the story is completely dropped, then that's when that, I guess, whatever you want to call it, the miracle, the singularity point, or whatever, that's when that shines.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is, you know, you might be someone, you've never mown the grass before. Your whole life, you've defined yourself, I am someone who will never mow the grass. So one day your partner says to you, okay, that's it, I'm leaving you unless you mow the grass today. for some reason you think to, oh, okay, I'll do it just this once. So you find yourself mowing the grass, and without the story, you see, without the story of why you're mowing the grass, or he made you mow the grass, or you know, I'm enlightened, I shouldn't be mowing the grass, or without the story, there's just the perfection of the moment. There's just the sounds of the lawnmower. There's the smell of the grass. There's sensations in the body. I mean, it's so simple. Life is so simple. Like when you're not trying to hold up any kind of image of yourself, and that goes back to what we were talking about before, which is the death. It's the death of the self-image that you've been trying to defend.
Exactly.
And that's love. Like love could look like mowing the grass, you know, and it could look like mowing the grass and not particularly wanting to.
Exactly. Exactly.